Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to this edition of Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I am very excited to have a special guest here who was recently referred to me by a peer of mine, and he has a very fascinating story and interesting background that I'm excited to share with you. Today as our guest, we have Larry Brayman. He is the president and founder of Global Career Consulting and Placement and Career University, an online platform of live and on-demand job landing, career advancing webinars. He helps people find and create more fulfilling, productive careers, both nationally and internationally. Drawing from his extensive experience in business and as a professional writer and actor, which this is the part I love, is that Larry's background is he started as an actor and then got into the career side of things, which I think is going to add a lot of value for our listeners today. Larry enables his clients to rise above their competition by powerfully presenting and marketing themselves in person and in writing. He has a reputation of highly motivating and being a very engaging presenter. In fact, he's designed and delivered hundreds of career development workshops and seminars, some of which have recently included CBRE, Kia Motors, Baxter Healthcare, Columbia University, and the California Community Foundation. He's a graduate of the University of Virginia and Circle in the Square Theater School and holds multiple career coaching certifications from Lee Hecht Harrison, the world's leading provider of corporate outplacement services. Larry, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. It's good to be with you.
Yeah. So some of the stuff that Larry and I are going to talk about today is really interesting. What I love that Larry and I had chatted about is the perspective of an actor and what how that sets the stage, literally, for your interview and for your success in your career. So Larry has some really fun ideas and topics here, some of which are going to include my favorite part, having a voice that people want to listen to. I think that's going to be really valuable. Making the connection, rehearsals, body language, how actors set the stage and deal with nerves, as well as something I had mentioned to Larry that I really wanted to discuss with our listeners is Skype interviews. I know I've done my share of Skype television interviews, and I'm mortified now that I've learned techniques from Larry and others about how to be effective at that. So Larry, you know, before we get into some of the questions, why don't you tell our listeners how you made that transition from being an actor and writer into a career expert?
Well, thanks, Jennifer. As I came to Los Angeles, well, many years ago, and the main reason I came was to be an actor. I had done theater up and down the East Coast and in Europe, and I was made the move to Los Angeles, and I had a typical actor's career of going, you know, up and down roller coaster in commercials and TV, etc. And then this thing started happening to me called family.
Oh, that thing. Stability,
yes.
Maybe,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the need for more stability. So
who needs that, right?
Well,
living paycheck to paycheck is way more fun.
That's a blast, yes. So I started to look at ways that I could apply things that I knew already and did well and see if I could apply those in other directions, more corporate, organizational type directions.
Ah, leverage.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I actually started working with a consultant, so like we do.
Yes.
And I started to develop programming that brought the best of lessons and experiences that I had in the theater world and started applying those to help people work better in organizations. So things like communicating and working as teams and presentation skills and being connected to your work and more engaged, all those things have direct correlations in the creative world that you could bring into the corporate world. So that's how I started to make the transition. And then many years ago now, started to specialize more and more in what we would call the career field to help people with their own professional and personal journeys in that space.
That is, and it's so fascinating because there are so many different vehicles that can take one person or another. For me, you know, I started off in recruitment and that got me into the career aspect. But I love the parallels that you've been able to draw between the career world and the acting world. As you and I were just talking before we got on the air, you know, I have a vocal coach and it's so helpful for all of us to have coaches. I know you even brought up something about how before any appearance that you do or any speaking engagement, you do vocal exercises. Is that something you would even recommend to somebody as part of your career university that they do before their interviews?
I always do. Whenever I'm speaking with a group or my clients about preparing for interviews, one of the things that I ask them to do is not only prepare vocally, but also physically for their moment and on stage. I mean, what actors do is that they come to a part, they come to this job, not just with their voices and their brains, kind of the things that we think we need to take into an interview, but really their whole selves. Their physical
being.
Selves, their being. And just so your body, we'll talk about warming up your voice, but I want to talk about even about warming up your body. That has to be there for you in an interview too, or any professional communication setting. Because if you are not giving the appearance that you are connected, that you're engaged, that you have energy, that you're alive, you're not going to make that essential connection with the person, with your audience. So breathing and an open body and a relaxed body that doesn't have a lot of tension in it, one that's loose, really can support your efforts in trying to hit your goal, which is your number one goal is really trying to connect with your audience. So people often, I often say, you may have seen me out stretching in the parking lot before I came in to do this seminar or presentation, because I warm up just like I would for an athletic event, just to make sure that my whole body is there and ready for me.
That's brilliant that you say that, because I tell that to job seekers all the time. Anybody who comes into my staffing agency, J. Hill Staffing Services, gets coached by myself or one of the team prior to an interview. And there was a great TED Talk. I don't know if you had seen it. I think it was Amy Coulter a few years ago, who did a TED Talk that actually correlated stretching before an interview to increases at a subconscious level in confidence. And so I'm always joking with job seekers, please just don't do it in the lobby. I just have this horrible picture of somebody like doing these wide stretches, twirling around, and then out walks the client.
Exactly.
Oh, Jennifer Hill told me to do that.
Exactly. Like, find your space.
Yeah.
And then there's something else interesting and kind of funny that happens sometimes, is that I also work with people on warming up your face. You've got your whole body, but you also, I mean, how do people connect in an interview? How do they connect to people when they're in conversation? It's through the eyes, right?
Oh, so true.
And so your face has to be animated and alive as well. So there's this old acting exercise where you sort of move all the muscles in your face. Have you ever done that?
No.
You want to try it?
I would love that.
Okay,
yes.
Just try it. And you following along at home, go ahead and just kind of move and your tongue and your lips and your mouth. And
I feel silly.
Right. It's the most ridiculous feeling thing that you could possibly
but
do.
But I wish people could see your face. Next time I have you in, we'll have to do a video podcast so everybody can see the faces.
Well, yeah, and the idea is that you've probably got some energy now. You can probably feel in your face like
you
a little
do.
Tingling
You feel
or
the
something.
Energy on your face.
Yeah, and that can help make you look and act and be more alive and awake and connecting in the interview. And I've had people tell me, a particular story, that somebody was driving down to Orange County for an interview, and there they were. They heard Larry in their heads, okay, I got to wake up my face. So there they were driving along and doing all the crazy stuff and expressions and with their face. And the person in the car next to them looked over and thought they were absolutely insane. But it doesn't matter, because you're doing your thing. You're getting ready. You're doing your prep work, and you're gonna score big in the interview.
You are so brilliant. That is a wonderful point that you raise, because I know when I've done work myself, again, I've never been an actor, but I've done a lot of on-camera appearances. There is a big difference between somebody who's deadpanned in the eyes versus somebody who is holding themselves at a higher level. It's almost, as Tyra would probably say, smizing. You know, you got to get that extra energy that really comes through, because if somebody looks dull or has a resting bitch face, which sometimes people do.
And just, they don't realize that they're doing it.
You don't realize it. And I never realized that when I first started in my industry, is that people were afraid of me. A, is that I was very intimidating, and B, that I wasn't somebody who people could naturally connect to. And so it took a lot of concerted effort and a lot of coaching from my own coaches to generate that warmth, that it's a way of being, but like you said, it's also the facial expressions, it's the light in your eyes. You know, something I remember one of my coaches said is, allow a conscious, loving breath right before an interview. And when you allow a breath, it's very interesting because if somebody tells you, take a breath, you gasp for air. It's an inadvertent reaction. But when somebody tells you to allow a breath, it really gives you a chance to be more mindful and more present and to sit as a man or woman of stature was another great point that somebody mm-hmm. said. Because so often, I'm sure you can speak to this as an actor, we tend to slouch or we have... So tell us about some of the body language stuff people do.
Right. Well, you reminded me when you said sit as a person of stature. There's something, it comes from acting, or it's actually a field beyond acting. It's called Alexander technique.
Okay.
And it's used in theater and dance and all kinds of, it's an old Russian art in a sense. And quite simply, we could break it down to the art of thinking up.
Thinking up.
And just like you said, it's not a forcing, like you said, with breath. Like you want to allow a breath to drop in, and that's really helpful as well. But it's just simply, and again, if you're listening to this, if you just allowed yourself to think up and saw your spine aligning, and you can picture this. Now, what I'm doing, I'm describing this so you can see.
Larry is waving his hand over his head.
I'm waving my hand over my head, and I'm pretending that I'm a marionette, okay, and that there's a string at the crown of my skull, and I'm just lifting that string gently, and that's lengthening my spine. And what that does is, whether you're standing or sitting, it just gives you more presence. It gives you more of an air of confidence, like you're ready
you're
for
owning
for action.
It. It's just owning. Really having that ownership of your confidence, because I know that's something that I'm sure actors and interviewees alike experience, is that nervousness. It's a human condition, whether you're going for a speaking engagement or for an audition or for an interview. People, even people who have been professionals for 10, 20, 30 years, sometimes clam up. What do you tell people to do when they get nervous?
The first thing I tell people to do, and you've already mentioned this, is breathe. Someone once asked me, Larry, from your acting perspective, what's the one thing I can do to help me stay on target, to not be nervous, to keep my focus in an interview? And I said, breathe. And even to the extent that to help remind people to breathe, I asked my clients to, when they go in for the interview, you know how you open up your little leather portfolio and you've got your legal pad there, maybe with some notes on there, but I asked them to put a little B, just a secret message to themselves, to remind themselves to breathe. It's just that allowing a deep breath, and you should probably practice this before, but if you do yoga or if you sing or dance and you're used to that low breathing,
deep diaphragm breathing
that babies do when they're born. If you ever observe them,
you
see babies, their tummies rise up and down when they breathe. That's the kind of breathing that we're really meant to do and that we've done before the world tells us to suck it in and hold everything in, and right? And
bird breath, that's what my vocal coach used to call me. He'd say, stop with the bird breath already.
Real high
like
in the
short
breaths. If you can practice taking a nice deep low breath, and steal that, even certainly as you're preparing for, you know, before you walk in, but even when there are moments in the interview, you ever have that, Jennifer, when you're in a tense situation and you start to get these out of body experiences,
of course.
Your mouth is going
and you look down at yourself
and you think, who is that talking,
and what were the words that just came out of that person?
Exactly. Who is that? A nice, deep, low breath, just one even, can bring you from being sort of all scattered
frenetic
and out of the ether and back
there.
Into where you need to be. And it can calm nerves. It can give you focus. If somebody catches you off guard with a really tricky question, you can just take that pause. We don't have to fill the space all the time at every moment in a conversation. And take that breath and collect your thoughts, still the nerves, and move on.
You raised such a great point. Just yesterday, I was at one of my best friend's weddings, and the brother of the groom was officiating. And what I really noticed, and he's not an actor, nor is he a professional coach like you or I, but what really stood out to me is his pauses and his intentionality in the way he spoke. And I pulled him aside afterward, and I said, you know, it was probably one of the more memorable weddings I went to, because when you allow a breath, and you pause. And as another coach would say, you put a period at the end of your statement, mm-hmm. and then you continue on. What the person just said lands at a completely different level than, you know, if you throw out 50 things rapid fire, which is what we tend to do as human beings when somebody's asked, why should we want to hire you? How many times have you or I or any hiring people out there heard, I'm hardworking, I'm detail-oriented, and 50 things, bam, 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 but not one of them lands because there's no pause. There's not that moment that you said of not having to fill the space, but of just allowing a breath and then going back to your point.
Right. And that kind of reminds me of an acting approach as well, which is stick to the script.
Okay.
Meaning you've said your answer. Someone's asked you to tell me about an experience. Tell me about a time where you've whatever. And you give your answer, and you've told a good story. And we can talk about how to tell a good story, or we can save that for another
session. I do want to know how to tell a good story, for sure.
But after you've made your point, let it be. Right? We're so nervous about having to fill up that space all the time, and that there's something wrong if we don't. Land your point, and see what kind of response you get. If there's a follow-up question, great, take the follow-up question. If there's not, and they seem to be a little bit flummoxed or something, but you've given your point a moment to land, then you can follow it up with your own follow-up question. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
And even better, a better follow-up question would be, are you dealing with any issues around that area here? Or what would be some of the main challenges I would face in that area if I took on this role? Then you're digging deeper. And getting to, can I sort of roll
the
forward
crux
with
of
another,
the position.
With getting to the crux of the position, which is what I think is another acting principle, which is to make the other person more important than you.
I love that. That's such a great principle. And the same is true of networking. That's where a lot of people hurt themselves in networking situations, is they run around and they're so quick to hand out their business cards and tell you all about themselves that there's zero connection there.
Right.
And the people who are the most memorable are the ones who just pause and they ask about you and they find out what you're passionate about. And the same is true in an interview. That's a wonderful point that you just raised, because when you start engaging with other people and finding out in an interview with what other people are interested in and finding out their passions, that's what matters most.
Right. The I always say the big secret about interviewing is that it's not about you. It's about them.
Yes.
Right? It's about finding out what their needs and issues are. And I call that a consultative approach to interviewing. You're going in and being a consultant, and you're doing a needs assessment, basically. And you're finding out what their issues are, and you're saying, okay, here are some of the solutions I can offer you if there happens to be the right match.
You're talking about solving a problem rather than just reacting and responding to interview questions. I think so many people are so afraid, like you said, they don't breathe before they go in. They're not properly prepared, and they're like a deer in the headlights. So when the questions are asked, they're just trying to give the best possible answer they can, but from a reactive place rather than an engaged, proactive, consultative approach.
Right. And if you keep the acting principle in mind, and this comes from improvisational theater, improvisational comedy, make the other person more important than you.
Yes.
Right? Be more interested in them, or make them look good. That's how you know you're doing a good job when you're doing improvisational theater, is that you look better when you make the other people around you look good. And so you're always focused on what the other people around you are giving you so that you can build on it, so you can work with it. And one of the cardinal sins of improvisational theater, because there are, I know it seems kind of crazy, but there are rules
Who
in
would have
improv.
Known?
Yeah, there are rules. And one of the rules is you can't negate what came before you.
Oh, that makes
sense.
You
have to build on it.
Yes and, right?
Yes and, that's exactly it.
And that's so true in an interview too. In fact, I'm incorporating that in a speech I'm giving this Wednesday to a large group of people about in the business world, the things that will kill your career is, no, I can't, no, I won't, no, I haven't, no, I don't. And if you can engage your staff from a manager perspective, or if from a job seeker perspective, you can play the game of yes and that's an improv technique. And I remember there was a great coach that I heard speak about that, mm-hmm. and I've even incorporated it in my own business. I tell my team, because whenever somebody hears the word no, it negates and it shuts down the energy of everything that just took place, versus when you play the yes and game, you're just constantly building upon what was already created.
Right. And there's that middle ground. There's the no to look out for, but there's also that other word, which is
But.
Yep, you got
good point.
You got it. Anytime it's a but, it's, you know, it's not quite your way, it's my way.
But.
Yeah, right? That's when you add the but, and that's what people are taking away. So if you can yes and them more, and especially in an interview situation, it really makes you cue in to what they've got going on, what their needs are, so that you can build on that and dig deeper and deeper. And that's what will sell you above your competition, because you're more focused and you're able to focus your sell, let's say, for lack of a better term, on what their real needs are.
That is genius. And so talk to me a little bit about what you touched on earlier, which is about the storytelling component. I could imagine that actors are well-versed and trained and adept at creating a story and taking it from start to finish. So I'd love to hear your opinion on how that would transpire from an interviewee perspective.
Right. Well, this is not only an acting technique, but also more of a writing technique. It's, you've heard of, there are all kinds of acronyms for good stories you can tell. There's a star story gets used a lot. Oh, you haven't heard?
I haven't heard of star.
Well, okay, you know what? Because I'm not going to talk about it.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about another acronym.
Another time.
Which is a SOAR story, which I like better, actually.
Okay.
And I get into friendly feuds with career coaches about this. But it's an acronym, SOAR, like the Eagles, S-O-A-R.
Yes, I think I have heard of that one.
And what it does is that it pulls great elements or key elements of great storytelling all together into a real concise pattern so that you can tell real compelling stories. So I'll run down the S-O-A-R really quickly for
you.
Okay. So the S in SOAR is the situation. That's the backstory. What's going on? So someone asks you about a big crisis you've had to overcome at work, and the S in your SOAR story might be, well, the situation was that we had these new, I work for Nike, and these new shoes had to ship to stores for a big new product launch on April 1st. That was the situation. That's the backstory.
Got it, the backdrop.
Now, O is the obstacle. Because in great storytelling, in any theater, without conflict, there's no drama.
Mm.
Right? So you need the nemesis. What was the hero going up against? Okay? So in this story, so I had to ship these shoes on April 1st. The obstacle was that the shoe boxes that were getting...
Were the wrong size.
Yeah, the shoe boxes came in like in mini. They just arrived from where we overseas, and they came in all in the wrong size. Right. And so none of them fit the shoes. So that's the obstacle. Now, A, action. What did I do to fix that problem?
Yes,
right?
That makes
sense. And also, we want to be careful when we're telling our stories, because people tend to use a lot of we in their stories, which is nice because we as a team, etc. But the people who are hiring you, they really want to know what you specifically contributed to solving this problem, right? So the action was that I called the team together, the graphic design team and the product sourcing team, and I researched all the local vendors of cardboard box making and printing, and we had this emergency huddle, and I was able to get the boxes to us. Actually, they were better boxes because they had a 3D hologram on them. I don't know, right? So that's what I did. The boxes came in on time because I did all these great things. And then R is the result. We got to drive this story home, right? So it's the so what question, right? What's the happy ending? And so the result was we actually were able to ship these shoes
earlier.
Sooner. Right, exactly. And the hologram was a big YouTube sensation, and so it
and
drove
went viral.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Yada, yada.
And we broke all records for a new shoe release, etc. Right? So S-O-A-R. And you can tell that story in like a minute. And I'll ask my clients to prepare their stories. And this is where acting comes in as well, because you can anticipate the things you're going to be asked about. So you should prepare and rehearse the stories that you're you can anticipate telling.
But not to tell it like from cue cards, because that's where there's a fine line, just like an actor would generate. There's generating the part and generating your story versus memorizing and rote memorization, which has you be completely disconnected with the interviewer.
Right.
So it's a fine line. It's
yes.
a tricky situation.
Right. And that's why, so good actors connect, right? And good actors also rehearse like crazy, usually.
Yes.
And the reason they do it is not so that when they get asked the question, when it's their time to speak, they speak it exactly perfectly right, you know, exactly the way they rehearsed it every time and make the inflection exactly. Good actors don't work that way. Good actors rehearse like crazy to get the material in them so they're really comfortable with it, so that they can, when it's time to connect, because that's what gets you the job, is connecting, right? More than knowledge in the end, right? We know that hiring managers hire on connection, that when it's time to connect, you trust that that stuff is in you, and that when you tell the story, it's going to be there for you, and you can tell it in a way that is
authentic.
That you're really, you know, you're looking the person in the eyes, and you are perhaps making some adjustments here and there based on other things that have gone on in that conversation. But the core material is there, and it gives you what I call a platform that you can leap from. But if you haven't done that preparation, you're kind of flying without a net. And we've all been in those situations where you're trying to make this stuff up on the spot, out of the
blue
sky.
And it comes out jumbled.
And we get nervous, and we're not making sense, or we ramble, right, forever.
Yes.
And so if we can work on the structure of these stories in advance, we can stick to the point. We can be concise. So there are probably a lot of people listening who may have that tendency to just go on and on and on. Stick to the point. If they want to know more, what are they going to do?
They're going to inquire.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's about, you want to share enough evidence. You want to share the examples of your productivity, efficiency, and performance, and where you've increased that, but without being so obtuse and going on and not getting to the point. You want it to be to the point where they can understand, take that point away, and go, oh, that was great. I loved what Larry just shared, and that makes him or her the perfect fit for the job.
Right.
So it's really tying it all together. I think that's a really good point for our listeners to take away, is that you want to answer the question that's being asked of you, because that's another pet peeve. Sometimes people will ramble on and on. I often, in preparation, I'm sure you see this a lot too, there are two very distinct questions that somebody might ask you in an interview. One is, why should we want to hire you? The other is, why do you want to work for us? And those questions, I oftentimes see job seekers get collapsed, and you can tell they're actually not listening to the question. Have you ever seen that on your end at all?
Well, what I see is that, again, this just opens the floodgates to rambling and not having a real roadmap to where you want to go. So those are questions that you can anticipate, and all those answers all go into one big category. They're like the tell me about yourself question. The answers to all these questions should be focused on what your research has told you about this job in terms of why you are a great fit. So any one of those questions, I think, should be answered by, you know, here is my story, but my story that is told in a way that is leading right to this job, that because I've got this and this and
it all
here
just
and
lines
here,
up perfectly.
This is where I'm going. It just comes right to your doorstep. And that's something that you can think about in advance.
Yeah, that's a wonderful point that you raise. And what I would love to know more about as well is setting the stage. That was something you and I had chatted about that I think is unique to actors, that a lot of lay people who might not be in that community would never even think about. Mm-hmm. How do I, quote unquote, set the stage for your interview? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. There are a lot of things that actors consider, or that, say, directors of theater, that anybody who works in this medium where you're trying to connect with an audience, that they consider that the, let's call them regular people, normal people,
yes,
don't necessarily think of. One of the things that we often overlook, and that most people overlook, is lighting.
Lighting?
Yes.
Okay. Should I bring a flashlight with me? Or
Well, you're not going to like sort of set up your own little designer lights when you go in for the interview.
That would be pretty funny, though.
Yeah, my hair, my light,
yes,
my makeup.
I need to have my crew come in with me to light
exactly,
me properly for
right.
the interview.
that'll get it for you.
Yeah, I don't think that would go over well.
No, but
please,
you
don't do that.
But you can't, right? Don't try this. But there are some things that you can do. There's an old axiom an adage in the theater that says, if we can't see you, we can't hear you.
Oh.
If you ever go to the theater, and just go to the theater, everybody, please, go to the theater. The next time you go to the theater, if you notice, there could be somebody sort of right center stage, right toward the front of the stage. If they're not well lit, They could be talking, and I promise you, you're going to have a hard time hearing them. It's this thing that our brain does. We need to see the people
in
order to process
and connect it.
Yeah, and make that connection. So there are some things that you can do in an interview at times to give yourself an advantage, or any kind of public speaking. You can, a lot of times, let's say they say, go into this conference room and wait, and we will be right
with
you.
Which happens all the time,
right.
Yes.
So you can choose your seat.
I would have never thought of that, really.
You can choose your seat. I always want to know if I'm going to be well lit. So I'm going to look up. I'm going to say, is this kind of shady? I'm going to look up, and if I can feel the lights on my face, I know I'm doing okay. I don't want to sit in front of a window that's open, a bright window in the middle of the day, because that's a lot of backlight.
And it'll make it hard for them to see you and connect with you. Wow, that's
interesting. They won't look at you either. They're hurting their eyes because it's a lot of brightness that they have to look into, or you're kind of in shadow because you're being lit from behind. So it can make a real difference. Even, and this is an in-between sort of physical thing and lighting thing and sort of just a visual thing, but when you go in and you get a chair, make sure your chair is all the way up as high as it can be. Because how many times do you go in and you're like down shrunken by the table and you feel like, can I do something? Can I move this? Yes, you can. Get up high, make yourself have more presence, a greater physicality, because you will come off as stronger, as having more authority and more confidence.
We learn something new every day, and I've been in many meetings. I'm sure I've been backlit numerous times and sitting on the lowest chair.
And down it right.
A question for you, though, mm-hmm. about that, because I've heard different people with different philosophies. If you're at an oblong table, or say it's a rectangular table, and you have the chair at the head of the table, what if that is the chair with the best lighting? Is it appropriate to take the chair at the head of the table, or is that not appropriate, or does it depend on the position?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know if there's one right answer to that. I do like people to be either in that, you know, just in a position where they can equally access everyone. So it's either at the head of that conference table. If it's like a real oblong thing and it's obvious that like you're in the chairman of the board seat, then maybe what you'd want to do is try and find that middle, go 90 degrees around the circle to a midpoint of one of the sides of that oval.
Okay.
But just so you're kind of in a middle place so that you can, it gives you authority and you really want to be able to access everyone and have everyone see you equally as well also.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. And from a body language standpoint, I know we could spend an entire show just on body language and what it says about you. I know we talked about some face exercises and some of those. Are there any tips that actors have, or any tips that you might share from your perspective that would help our listeners from a body language standpoint?
Right. Well, let's just to review, we want to think up.
Think
right?
up.
We don't
want to
be slouched.
Yes.
Right? We definitely don't want to be slouched. We don't want to be sitting back and down in the chair. And this, from an acting perspective, makes a lot of sense, because if you're slouched down or smushed in any way or off to the side and you're not in what we would call good alignment, that affects your breathing.
Hmm.
It affects you kind of, because you're kind of pushed down on your diaphragm and your stomach, and all that can kind of cut you off from your breath. From also kind of your emotional self, from just allowing things to really freely flow throughout the body and the blood to flow into your brain where you especially need it. So you don't want to be kind of cut off, smooshed down, leaned over, hunched over. You want to have a nice
elongation.
And you also want to avoid things like crossing body parts.
Yes.
Right, crossing arms, crossing legs. I mean, not only does it give off signals like I'm not accessible, I'm not fully open.
Yes.
To you, right? I'm not fully in communication and connection to you. But it can also do things like cut you off from yourself. You should try this if you're just playing with this at home. You just, cross your legs or cross your arms and see if you don't feel
constricted. You actually, I could see that, where you're going to feel more constricted when things are crossed.
Right. And you want just this open flow, and you don't want to cut yourself off from yourself in any way.
Have you heard about the head tilt thing?
Show me the head tilt thing. Yeah.
So it's funny. I see this a lot with some of the millennials we work with. And there was actually a gentleman, of all things, who came into our office a few years ago. And he was a brilliant kid out of one of the UC schools. And I couldn't get over it. The entire interview, his head would tilt to the left and then to the right, and tick-tock back and forth. Mm-hmm. And to an interviewer, that means that you're not taking what we have to say seriously. And so most of the people who I've spoken with respect to body language, always say, keep your head perpendicular to the interviewer, because it can almost come across as flirty in some ways, or it can come across as not taking the job seriously.
Right. When you do those kind of head tilts or any kind of leaning, you're giving away your power.
Okay. Right?
You're sort of saying, you know, I'm not fully here. I'm not fully. It's sort of a weakening thing. When you look at it in the mirror, you look at somebody who's straight up and down and perpendicular. Now, we're not recommending that people be rigid and feel like they have to have tight necks and that sort of thing. We don't want that. We want you to feel comfortable in the interview. But yes, that sort of tilting and leaning. If you look in the mirror, you'll see, you know what, that person looks like they're giving away something. They're not fully
confident, owning their
right,
greatness.
Being there with all their strength. Right.
Another really quick tip that I just noticed the other day, it's very rare I've seen it happen, but sometimes we'll see individuals who will come in and they'll be sitting in the lobby waiting to meet with a client or ourselves, and they have either sunglasses on or they have an earbud in, different variations of that. Or sometimes I've had a lot of, this has come up quite a bit, clients actually don't like to see people on their cell phones. And a lot of articles I've been reading lately are saying you're much better off to have something paper or to read a magazine that's sitting on the table, because if your head is buried in Angry Birds and then the person comes out to grab you, it just makes you seem distracted. But you have to be careful of any of those accoutrements that could be distracting from the person who's about to come and meet with you.
Right. Just from the acting world, just know that you are always on.
Yes.
You're always on. Can I tell you a story?
Yes, please.
So I was going down to meet with some executives from Kia Motors down in Orange County.
Okay.
And I was going to talk to them about doing a nice training and development program with them. And I was waiting in the lobby. Now, the lobby of Kia USA is like this massive cavern, and it's got a lot of their cars in there because they're showing their newest stuff to people who are coming in, and it's
that
part
makes
of their
sense.
Branding.
Good marketing,
right? Right. So I thought, how do I want to be discovered when the HR executive comes in? I thought, I want to be discovered checking out
one of
their
cars.
So
brilliant,
I made
yeah.
sure I stood there for a long time.
That's awesome.
But I was found checking out one of their cars, because that was a way of me setting
connecting
the stage and
them.
Making that connection. Exactly. So know that you're always on.
Yeah, as opposed to playing Angry Birds, you're actually engaging with the product that interests them. And, you know, whether you're at a law firm or an architecture firm, oftentimes they're going to have magazines out for you to learn about what it is they do, in right. the same way that Kia had the cars available.
There'll be magazines. There'll be mission statements on the wall. There are all sorts of things that you can engage in. There'll be some awards, things that they're proud of.
You could even engage with the receptionist. That's one of my favorite things. Sometimes people don't realize this. No matter what size company you're at, the receptionist can be the first person who's interviewing you, whether or not you realize it. If you engage with him or her and you greet them and you find out their name, how long have they been there, it really helps, because oftentimes the receptionist is the right hand to the HR person.
Right. They will definitely be asked, how did she treat you? How did
yes.
he treat you? Was he respectful, etc.? So yes, that's definitely part of the scene. It's part of the show.
Well, I would love to get your two cents on, because this is especially important from an acting perspective, because now we're dealing with the camera, Skype. We do a ton of Skype FaceTime interviews on our end, on the recruitment end, and more our clients are doing video conferencing, Skype interviews, you name it. And sometimes, you know, you get somebody's forehead in the shot, and, you know, you never know what part of the person's body you're going to see when you Skype them. So how do you set yourself up powerfully for a Skype interview?
Well, first, practice. So some of the things that you're going to want to pay attention to when you're practicing is make sure that you're well lit. Doesn't surprise you, but lighting from the front, light
as
toward the face,
to the back,
makes
yes.
a huge difference, because the lighting from the back in a Skype will throw off, because there are these auto settings usually that your camera does, and it can throw off all kinds of things. Mm. So make sure that you've got some lighting coming from the front. Natural light tends to look best. If you can be sort of in front of a window and have that color light on your face, that tends to make people look really, really good. So think about how you're lit. Look at the background.
You don't want dirty diapers, barking dog.
Exactly. So you've got things you want to control for your environment. You've got sounds to control for, but you've also got stuff hanging around. You just want it nice and clean. You don't want stuff distracting. You don't want people looking around your room going, okay, wow, she's really into rugby or something, right? You want them focused on you. So try and keep that clean, professional, even a blank wall or something. But think, this is your setting the stage. So think about the job that you're going for, and you might have some props in there that are related to your interests that might be connected to somehow relevant to
the job. Have a picture of your favorite Kia behind you.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And so think about that. Think about the clothes that you're wearing and the jewelry that you might be wearing. And because you want to keep it simple, you don't want it to be distracting. And some of the stuff can actually throw off cameras. By too many stripes, patterns, etc., you can get these video kind of
nuttiness. Can blur it in.
Exactly. So you don't want, and this is for whether you're in person or on Skype. Jewelry that's dangly earrings that are flopping around because they're going to be following, hypnotized.
Or bracelets and necklaces.
Yeah, big
for
clanky
women too.
Things, etc. And remember, people connect through the eyes, right? Like we said that before. But whether you're in person or on camera, first of all, you want your eyes visible. You want your hair out of your eyes. You want a nice clear shot to your eyes. If you have glasses, maybe you should get near no glare or something, but so they can actually see your
or
eyes.
Or even take off your glasses. I always tell job seekers for in-person interviews as well as Skype interviews, if you don't need the glasses to see up close, I would recommend taking them off because it's putting a barrier between yourself and the person you're interviewing with, especially when you're on a Skype. It creates another boundary and obstacle to overcome.
Right, that's true. We want to look for every opportunity we can to remove walls and connect. And sometimes those are physical, like glasses. Sometimes it's, for example, if I'm ever doing public speaking, if I'm giving a speech, I want to get out from behind a podium, for example, so I can connect with the audience. And same thing if you're at an interview and you've got a desk with lots of stuff on there. See if you can get at an angle where there's not a monitor in between you
and the person
or
you're
piles of
with.
Stuff between you and the person you're interviewing with, because it's all about making that connection. You don't want walls in your way.
Barriers. Great. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think if there were any other tips.
We did talk about looking into the camera versus looking at the other person. And this takes practice too. And just filming yourself do this. But when you look at the camera, and for most of it, it's like this little tiny dot at the top of our screen, but it does give more of an impression that you're looking at the people who are watching you, that you're looking at them in the eyes. It's something you don't beat yourself up if you're not doing it all the time. But when you can, try and make that connection by looking at the camera.
Look at the camera as though it's the person. Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts? I had just read an article about this the other day about actually setting your computer on a box. That way it's at eye level. Have you given any thought to that?
Well, that's typically how I have things set. You mean so you're not either looking
way up or way down.
Right. Well, and you'll get a good impression of that if you record yourself, because most people know how to do that. If not, you can figure out how to make a little video of yourself on your computer when you're practicing these things. And see if that eye level looks like you're talking person to person. And yes, and you can make those adjustments accordingly.
Okay, great. So you've given us some great tips for Skype, for how to be effective and set the stage for interviewing. Are there any tips that you'd like to offer for the end of the interview? Anything to close it out or to make that strong impression? I'm sure actors must have stuff with that.
Well, we want to keep all those things in the background, all the things that are making us look and sound and feel confident. And then I recommend there's one of the boldest questions I think you can ask, but I think it can really pay dividends.
Let's hear it.
And that question is your own version of this. Are there any questions or concerns or issues I can address?
That's my favorite too. I love that. That's what I tell everybody.
Right. Are there any questions, concerns, or issues I can address in order to be seen as the top candidate in your eyes? Something along those lines.
Yeah. And are there, is it, because you're essentially giving them a chance before you leave the interview to overcome any obstacles, objections, or hesitations they have, rather than kicking yourself on your way home and going, shoot, I forgot to mention X, Y, or Z.
Right. Or letting them just, because what happens, I'm sure many of you listening have interviewed people, and as soon as that person leaves, if there's more than one person in the room still with you, what do? You start talking.
Yes.
Oh, I think she had this. She wasn't so strong here. He could have done more here. I think, right? So if you can get that conversation going while you're still in the room,
You
are definitely upping your chances. So you have something to address, and it's a real gift. It's bold, but I think it's a really strong, confident, and brilliant strategy.
Ah, that is, I love all of your tips and ideas. I'm so happy that we've had you on the show today, Larry. And let me tell our listeners a little bit about some of the stuff that you can find out about Larry. Larry, you have your mycareeru.com, and that's a career university that you recently launched. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Right. Well, Career University is an online platform of live and on-demand job landing and career advancing webinars. So you can go to mycareeru.com. U as in university, that just the letter U.
Okay.
And 24/7, you can access content, high-level strategic content that is in webinar form. So those are online courses, and they are in-depth, they're interactive. So, and you can, before, you know, there's one on interview prep with a lot of the things that we've been talking about, on networking, on taking your resume to the next level. And there, I have to say they're very good.
Okay, and, give yourself a little pat on
that. Yeah, I will. Well, these are I compile the curriculum, but I use a lot of other top career coaches and consultants and career professionals, recruiters, etc. from around the country. And they're in depth. It's not like the typical, you know, 2 minute
cursory
spot that you get on the internet that you can get for free. They're very affordable. And they're in a full length, so for 30 or 45 minutes, you can go really deep. You can also get a quick highlights version if you just have like 10 or 15 minutes.
The cliff notes.
Yes, exactly. So to follow up on the kind of strategy that we've been talking about, and that would be a great place to access more and more in depth. And of course, people can. I am a career coach and consultant.
Great.
As
so
are
how
you.
Would they hire you or just, find you?
You can find me. The simplest way is just send me an email to lbraman at mycareeru.com. And if I can help you, I certainly will.
Well, Larry has had a plethora of information for us today, and we'll definitely be having you on the show again. In fact, I believe it was our mutual friend Allison Garrido who has introduced us, right?
That's right.
I don't know if you know this. She's actually guest hosting for me next week when I'm in Europe.
She told me, and she's bringing in one of the greatest people that you could have.
Oh, tell me.
Your
I was about to read a little bit about who she's bringing in.
Oh,
so it's going to be.
I hope we're talking about the same person.
Let's see here. Tom Henschel?
Yes, Tom Henschel.
Oh, tell me what you know about Tom.
He's a good friend. He is an excellent executive coach and one of the foremost communication
experts
in the country. He's that good, and he's great to listen to. So I highly recommend that people either tune in live or pick up the archive.
Yeah, you can also find us on iTunes. So you can find us on iTunes or on Google Play and subscribe weekly for free to the podcast. Just go to Get Yourself the Job on iTunes or on Google Play. And as Larry just mentioned, next week, so Allison Garrido, who is amazing and was on the show back on April 4th, is going to be interviewing Tom Henschel, who Larry highly recommends, and is an esteemed executive coach whose expertise is in helping people present themselves effectively. And they will discuss different ways to present yourself in the best possible light. And I believe he's a leadership expert as well, right?
He's a leadership expert. And like me, he comes from the acting world as well.
How funny.
So
what a small world.
Speak a similar language.
That is terrific. Well, that'll be the perfect follow-up then. And again, today, this is Jennifer Hill with Get Yourself the Job. We've had Larry Braman here on the show today. And we're so grateful for you tuning in and look forward to having you join us next week. Thanks so much, and have a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.